Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good morning. Welcome to the Neil Baker Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
And welcome to our callers. Today, of course, we're taking your calls for on-air readings, but first we're going to be discussing the complex nature of spirituality. So I want to let our callers and listeners know that we will be getting to your calls approximately 15 to 20 minutes after the show begins, so very soon. So please do keep your place in the queue, callers. We'll be getting to your call shortly. And again, discussing the complex nature of spirituality. Before we get to that, I want to invite our callers and listeners to join us on Blog Talk Radio, as well as follow us on Twitter and join us on our Facebook sites, Neil and Kristen Baker, as well as Neil Baker Psychic. Our call-in number, 914-338-0164. Callers, if you'd like to speak with us, please press 1. Caller from the 201 area code does not have their hand raised. So if you'd like to speak with us, please do press 1 on your handset so we know that you are in the queue for reading area code 201. Okay. So, without further ado, the complex nature of spirituality, and I guess the reason we've been kind of talking about this show for a while, and we've done other shows on the superficiality of spirituality. We're kind of, just continuing the conversation. And what happened recently is I responded, I do a lot of all of our online communication. Neil doesn't use the computer. And I saw something on a friend's wall on Facebook that was a question regarding a series of numbers that they had seen or a friend had seen, something like that. And there were a multitude of responses that were not accurate, probably. And, essentially oversimplified. So my response to this was, you have to be very careful when someone asks about a series of numbers, particularly the numbers that were in question. And I detailed the multiple things that the numbers could possibly mean, including meaning nothing, because sometimes you can see series of numbers and it just means that your brain is tuned to look at the clock at a specific time. And there was a response from a gentleman in the forum that was stating that, the answers are all found within nature. Go to nature and be silent. So I thought it was a very interesting response, because while there is simplicity in spiritual practice, absolutely, spirituality has a dual nature. So to say that being spiritual is just about being simple is really erroneous. Wouldn't you say, Neil?
I would say that. I think that complexity and simplicity somewhat go hand in hand, because the idea that everything comes down to a simple level, but then again, simplicity is complex, because the simple things that we have are usually amassed by a complexity of thought. Even if we say we are one, we just aren't one. It belongs to a concept. So when we're dealing with the complexity, we're dealing with the way things interact in multiple ways. And that means that, generally speaking, parts interact. The idea of oneness actually encompasses the idea of wholeness. And if you have wholeness,
there are multiple parts.
There are multiple parts, and it's put into one concept. Now, the idea of simplicity is to give us direction. If we were so overwhelmed by every thought in the universe, every invention, every phenomena, every molecule, every atom, everything that we have that is stored in our memory, we would never be able to separate the complexity from the simplicity. When we get to simplicity, we narrow things down to a workable level. So even if you take the computer, which I don't have a lot of knowledge in, but think about how many parts there are connected to it, where the internet is, the satellites, the components of the computer, the internet itself, and those parts, the energy fields. I mean, it is so complex that to even think of it, if you were a layman, you'd be overwhelmed.
It would completely.
Same with spirit, because spirit is composed of matter we can't even comprehend, because spirit is composed of things in the universe and beyond the universe. So when we look at that aspect and we expect a spirit to speak to us, on what level? Does a spirit speak to us about where we're going to go, what we're going to have, who we're going to meet? Or does the spirit talk to us about the destination of our soul, where we come from, how many multiple past lives we've had, where our future is bound? It's really overwhelming when we look at I'm all for simplicity, but I'm not so ignorant as to say that simplicity is the assessment and the massive amount of collection that brings things to a simple level of interpretation. But still, we're always dealing with things that are complex.
Right. I mean, even on a physical level, I mean, spirituality, how can it not be complex? There are so many spiritual practices. People have their own spiritual experiences. That alone makes spirituality complex. And those are only two facets of spirituality.
Those are only two facets. And then we have the order. We have organized complexity and disorganized complexity. Of course, when we have disorganized complexity, we have chaos.
Which actually brings me to a point, because that's what I found in this thread. I mean, the answers were all over the map, and really there was not a logical and psychic investigation supporting the answers that were given. This is why we don't answer questions in emails, online forums and things like that. I mean, there are general answers that can be given to specific questions, but it takes deeper investigation, psychic penetration, and a questioning of the subject that's having the experience.
That's right. And when you're dealing too with the abstraction of entities and spirits and guides and vibrations and such things, disorganized complexity can actually bring about issues that are largely random. So when you get issues that are largely random, you kind of, the properties of the system are such that you kind of lose your control. That's why we have such things as probability and statistical analysis and methods of measurement. That's why we have the counting system, so that we're just not, it's just not an array and a bombardment of a feeling or a number. Things have to become organized, and that's where we get to the process of organized complexity, which brings into account how one, a human being, can understand and comprehend and put together in a coherent form the attitude, the reflection, the vibration, the sensation of things from a totally expansive universe, where all the components are coming from realms that are beyond the human comprehension. So it's how we filter things in and take it in, just much like televisions do with reception and things like that. We amass everything into a coherent picture. And that's the same thing with spirit. I think that we as human beings, what we have to do, and the process can be instantaneous, is when we get a vibration from a spirit or an entity or some muse or whatever you want to call it, an angel, a guide, our brains have to quickly collect the data and put it into a human
right form and synthesize that.
Otherwise, you know, people will say, well, I don't know. I kind of get a feeling it may not go well. What does that mean?
Right.
I kind of get a feeling that you shouldn't go, or I kind of get a feeling that they don't like you. Well, kind of get a feeling, very vague. It's more chaotic, but to be fair, to kind of get a feeling about something has some issue with intuition. So we can be intuitive.
So we're in the lower brain.
We're
being intuitive.
We're in the lower psychic brain.
The lower intuition. Psychic brain, and also in the body, because
in
intuition is in the gut.
In the gut, you're right. So we're in the gut, which has its validity, because the gut is the first reception of content. It receives content inside the womb. So the idea of the gut, the lower brain, our stomach, which graduates eventually to the heart, which starts to balance the gut from the intellect. So the heart plays a big part. We think of our heart, well, they have a core. We create this personification of our heart as though it were a living thing. Oh, you have a cold heart. Well, did you take the temperature of the heart? Or you have a warm heart. We use these vague terms poetically and stylistically because it comes to our focus that we know what we mean when we say such a thing. But a cold heart really has no purpose in the universe. A warm heart means nothing in the universe. The universe knows nothing of a warm heart or a cold heart. The universe knows something of a logical conception of balance between the intellect and the emotion, between logic and intuition. Now, that is where the components of the mind, if you will, the right and left brain hemisphere, the situation of
body, mind, and soul,
these are more comprehensible terms to the element of spirit and guides, which will usually activate some form of, if you will, language to a receiver in such a way that you try to avoid, well, I get a cold feeling about this, or I get a warm feeling about this. There's going to be the more advanced you are in terms of communicating to the complexity of spirit, the more specific you're going to be in the delivery of what you have to say. But that's not to say that we all, myself included, are prone to error or prone to vagueness, ambiguity, and using the very words that I'm issuing out, you shouldn't say, like warm heart. I've said these things.
Sure.
In clumsy attempts to categorize a situation. But still, nonetheless, it's a fascinating thing. We shouldn't be afraid of the complexity of spirit, because actually, on the parallel universe, it's very simple.
Right. And, you know, in this conversation, this gentleman was, you know, stating that knowledge is ego. And, you know, it's just not true. I mean, if you're going to gain cosmic intelligence, you have to study. You have to study. And in my communication with spirits, which they have been communicating with me in a absolutely concrete way that could not be argued, which I'm not going to go into. It's pretty amazing. I mean, I would not have believed this myself, that this could happen with spirits. But in their communication, what they're telling me to do is to learn. They're not saying, oh, go sit in a forest and listen to the wind blow. And though that may have its place, being still in the mind, this brings up another topic, Neil, about meditation, because we have a lot of people calling us saying, listen, I'm meditating and I'm trying to activate my psychic vision through meditation. And oftentimes the form of meditation is a stillness within, which is fantastic. It has its place, but it's not necessarily going to awaken the third eye.
Well, no. And I mean, you bring up a couple of terms that I want to quickly address, one of which is ego, which is basically the accumulation of personal experience and our interaction with the world, which is based upon our very nature. So ego isn't really something. That's why people say you got to get beyond your ego to hear the spirit guides, because ego is more attuned to our experience on the planet, our immediate experience. And it's an expression of how we have that intercepting factor between action and reaction. The ego is the very thing that gets in between what we feel and what we put out. It's our interpretation of the world and then our best use of survival in terms of our interpretation of the world. So really, ego has more to do with our creative survival and our primitive survival than it does have to do with the understanding of how we access our higher senses to the language outside of the planet.
Right. And I think the point, this, I mean, people misuse ego. Obviously, we've talked about this on the radio before, but person's understanding of what was going on in the sharing of knowledge and education was completely off base.
Yes.
Completely off base.
True. And quickly, the other point, stillness. We think that stillness is something that is devoid of sound. But we get caught up, we kind of get away from the idea of really what stillness is, because stillness requires consciousness. Otherwise, there is no stillness. So as soon as you conceptualize stillness or create a sense of stillness, you're impacting the experience and the sensation with consciousness. Just like you can't
right,
have
so
nothingness.
You can't escape it. You can't escape.
You can't escape it. They're all one and the same. So we have the yin and the yang, the duality, the complexity, the simplicity, all in one big neat package. And so what you know, at some point in time, we should understand what the concept of consciousness is in terms of spirit and the complexity of realms beyond our planet.
Next show, because we're going to be continuing this on Friday. And there's more to say about that interaction that we'll get to then as well, because I've got an analogy, which I may have used before here on the air, but I'm going to use
it
again.
I thought you had an analogy. That's turned into some, well, things morph.
They do. It's complex, Neil. Okay, first caller, 575.
Hi.
Area code. Hello. Hi, who's this?
This is Tammy.
Tammy?
Yes.
Hi, Tammy. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Good. Tammy, really, where are you calling? Oh, go ahead.
From Texas.
Great. Go ahead with what you're saying. I'm sorry to interrupt.
I just really appreciate the conversations about the logic and the intuition and how that connects with the body, mind, and soul. So I really needed to hear that today.
Oh, good. We're so glad. Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for tuning in. Tammy, what's your birth date, please?
7/20/63.
You know, Tammy, I'm old enough to remember the movie Tammy, Tell Me True. I think it was Debbie Reynolds.
Are you going to start singing?
No, oh God, no.
Okay, I was going to hang up. No.
No, I won't do that. But the illusion, you know, she was so popular at one point. She was as popular as anything, Tammy. But anyway,
great. Tammy, do you have a specific question today?
Well, I'm just, you know, in a situation where I'm trying to get all my clients ready for the new year, and some of them are dragging their feet, and it's just really putting me in a hard spot financially. And just curious, you know, about that transpiring into a positive manner, and what do I need to do to help it along, or did it, you know, I'm just in a situation where I need to make some decisions, so I needed some insight.
Okay, all right. And what kind of work do you do?
I do contract work for, like, introducing American products into other countries.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. Very interesting. And she's 53 years old?
No.
Go ahead, Neil.
Well, here, you know, we were talking, I can see where your issues of complexity occur, because you're dealing with diverse cultures and countries and trying to bring the fact of American products into those areas, and quite timely. So, you know, your clients, the diversity of your clients, I think that whether you're looking at them individually or as a group, and then formatting that to a direct plan of action to how, I guess I would imagine, Tammy, that every contract you have or whatever groups you're working with, they're diversified in terms of the
right.
products that they're representing. Is that true?
Yes.
So, you know, I guess you have to really look at each individual compartment here. It's just like when Chris and I give readings, we, you know, somebody may want to have something about business. Somebody may want something about relationship. And
right.
somebody may want something about, you know, whatever it may be. Some people are intelligent. Some people are more emotional. Some people have an education. Some people don't. Well, you can't, there is not one application for all. But what you
right.
do is you take the interest level of the component you're working with, and you give that energy the incentive to cooperate with you as an agent, so to speak. So I would
okay.
say that your connection to your individual clients has to become a bit more personalized, but to the extent that it's of value to them. Now, I don't know if you go through a gambit of personalized or depersonalized connections with your clients or through what process you attach to them so you can deliver the energy. Am I making any sense here in terms of that concept?
Yes, you are. And, you know, I've done that as much as I can with this one particular one that I'm focused on. It's working in Africa, Central and South America. And I try to be personable about it with them. However, you know, they're limiting that access to them.
And I
feel like it's cultural things. I don't feel like it's personal.
It may be. You know, what you can do, Tammy, to desensitize the personal aspect of your connection with your clients is to ask them questions. Let them fill you in on what they need, what they want. Thereby, you can discover the block and eliminate it. So instead of approaching them with your concept, because there may be some built-in biasness or prejudice or power or whatever it is, ask some questions. Usually in asking a question and receiving the response in an affirmative way so that they feel you are representing them may be of help. I'm not sure. What is your questioning process? And by activating your questioning process, have you discovered or have you not yet discovered the best access to delivering the product?
That is, I mean, you're spot on, because when I do ask a question, you know, I get immediate response, but then it just answered my question. I mean, that is the way when I ask a direct question, but the problem is, like, whenever I talk to them directly about, you know, the funds going to me, I get silenced. And I know they're waiting on some things to happen, but I don't really know how to talk to this culture like that.
Well, you know, the only thing I can suggest to you, I mean, there is a kind of in-depth study about energy and how energy supersedes language. So sometimes the energy level of your being can promote a better access to a more flowing sense of language. And when we get into these abstractions about how to apply energy to conversation, we're getting into something a little bit too deep for our program needs today, time factor. But I would say that you would have to go to an energy level of inducing the access of information to a degree to which there is delivery, but you got to do it through energy. And I know that sounds a bit obscure, but in the depth of it, there is an answer.
I get it. I mean, not knowing specifically what kind of energy you're talking about, but I do know that energy is so important.
Indeed it is. And Tammy, we wish we had a little bit more time, but we've got so many callers today. You're always welcome to call back or call 562-596-7818 to after the show.
Okay.
And that's the number for the conversation that the radio cannot accommodate. So
okay.
Good luck to you,
Thank
though,
you.
And we're glad you found the show. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, and we have a call. I'm having a problem muting the call here. All right. From Amy. Amy? Is
Hello.
This Amy? Hi, Amy.
Yes.
Okay. So 1229-69 Neil 39-12-3. And Amy, I'm guessing you're calling about the dream that you had. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm still curious. I mean, I feel kind of settled, but I guess I'd love your perspective. So
okay. So do you remember the dream? Why don't you detail the dream briefly?
Okay.
For Neil.
Sure. I was okay, somebody, a man grabbed me and was holding me with a box cutter to my neck. And I tried to yell out. And in my dream, I was perceiving that I couldn't make a sound. And then I just kept fighting. And I said, well, so something to the effect, like, if you're going to do this, you better do it fast because I'm going to make it miserable for you. So, I mean, it was kind of like I felt strong and I felt like, okay, I'm going to fight back. And my boyfriend woke me up and said, what's wrong? What's wrong? Are you okay? And then the next day told me that it took him a long time to wake me up.
Okay.
So I was in struggle for a while before he was able to get my attention. So I was worried.
So you were concerned. So you were concerned about what the dream meant, is what the dream means, if there's a real danger. That's what you expressed in the email that you sent me. But
Was it psychological or was it an actual premonition warning?
Well, okay. So here's my interpretation, which could go from A to Z, depending on what I'm perceiving about your particular dream. And I take all possibilities into account, but I don't think it is a premonition. And I don't think somebody's out to, I don't think you're going to find yourself being, you know, threatened in the physical world with a box cutter to your throat. I think what happened to you, Amy, was in the astral realm, you encountered a force, a entity of some sort that was threatening your chakra number 5. The box cutter, the box here is the chakra. The voice box.
Which is the 5th chakra.
And it's going to your throat area, meaning that you have a strong voice. You have a strong female voice. I hear that. You might have had to learn how to get that voice. There might have been something in your upbringing to where your voice was stifled or overburdened by an authoritative figure, and you may be carrying psychological leftover molecules or cells from that experience of how you've had to travel through this lifetime to gain a strong voice. Now, something immediately around in your surroundings may be challenging your ability to speak. It may be a male figure. It may be something in business or in private life where there is a male energy that could be compromising the outward flow of communication coming from within. Does that make any sense yet?
Definitely.
Yeah. So because we're so limited in our time on the radio, you would need to go in there and figure out 3 things. One being the physical manifestation of this problem and how to solve it in a physical way. 2 would be the emotional, spiritual aspect of this problem. And 3 would be if there's any past life indications going on as they travel forward into this time zone. And that would immediately be matched with the root system of how your experience was on the planet when you first emerged here and had to fight for communication, maybe within a family structure. But if we jump to the chase, we would have to assume that there is probably a male counterpart that is challenging your communication. And so therefore you're going to have to kind of be like Sigourney Weaver and Alien and forget about all the, you know, she didn't go, and when she was fighting that monster, she didn't go on the psychiatric couch. She jumped into the spacesuit and just fought the damn thing. So you might have to use some real primitive energy and forget all the spiritual babble and get to it. You know, I'm not sure. That would require more detail
work. So just to review, this was an astral dream, but it had psychological content. So it was kind of a mixed bag in terms of what she experienced.
Yeah.
Psychological dream with an astral. And, you know, it's actually great. We actually planned the radio show topic before you emailed Amy, but it's really in line with what we talked about, because Amy had sent the email and I explained that, you know, I got a vibe that it was not a premonition as well, but to say that in an email would have been very irresponsible, and there's much more investigation that needs to go on in a dream like that. So this is an example of exactly the topic today.
And I are currently working on a book that takes into account the in-depth structure of activity, Earth activity. And there always is some in-depth structure, and it's worthy of examination. So in your case, yes, but when we get to the point of how to resolve this issue, you getting a long time waking up is yet you're caught in an astral realm, and your astral body was not coming into apparent availability. So there's something deeply going on in the root system of this problem, but that doesn't mean it can't be resolved within a day.
Okay.
Does that help, Amy?
Yes. I mean, I guess it raised an eyebrow enough for me to say, pay attention. But then dispersing some of that, like, am I in danger? I kind of felt no as well. And I knew reaching out to you is like, you know, not – you can't really say much, but I also knew that reaching out to you disperses some of it for me, so that I'm not sitting
Definitely.
There freaking.
Absolutely.
So,
and you're always welcome
that.
To do that. You're always welcome to do it. It's just that when it comes to personal questions, because of the complexity of each individual psyche and experience, answering an email just, you know, isn't the best way to go. But always questions on spirituality, numbers, all those are, you know, things you can do in an email. So that's why I directed you here today, but I'm glad we could help.
I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate this helping me disperse the energy, helping me start to understand so that, you know, some of the stuff that it's obviously getting my attention with, you know, I don't know if it's a warning signal, but it's like a, hey, pay attention.
Right. And
you
I mean, it's definitely a war. It's definitely a signal to delve within and resolve whatever issues are causing this type of experience in your astral state. So
thank you for remaining standing.
Well, I'm sorry. What was that? You're breaking up.
Oh, sorry. Thank you for helping facilitate understanding so that this, you know, so that we can move forward. And
you're
so
welcome.
I appreciate that. All right.
You're very
thanks.
Welcome. Okay. Thanks, Amy. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. And it's really weird. I'm having a slow internet connection, so it's taking a while to mute and unmute. 701. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Lisa. Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. I'm Laurel.
Hi, Laurel.
Hi. My birthday is today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Do you need my year?
Can we get a year? Assuming you're not born you weren't actually born today.
No. 1964.
Okay. Well, that's a nice birthday treat for you, getting a reading on the air.
Thank you.
Oh, interesting. You're the same number as our former caller. Same master number 3 and same karmic number 39. And you're 52 today, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just feel really lately like lagging. Like I should be doing some things and I just can't get the energy to move forward. So I'm just wondering why that would be, if that you see that changing soon.
Okay.
First of all, Laurel, you need to connect to Hardy.
Hilarious.
Oh,
hilarious.
Good one.
They always scared me, I have to admit, Laurel.
My kids don't even know who that is. I asked them once. Yeah.
Oh, for shame. They're very
common. Younger generation.
Well, you know, But let's get beyond the sick joke here. I mean, you know,
well, I wouldn't
feel
call
like
it
I'm walking out of the barn with straw in my throat.
God, you keep mentioning the word barn.
I know.
That
well,
one
maybe it's the hick in me. I don't know. But when we talk about Law and Hardy, in all boldness, when we talk about Law and Hardy, we're talking really, in your case, about the male and female psyche within yourself and the passive and aggressive attitude and the energy that I, for one, I don't know what's more aggressive, a male or a female. I don't know what's more passive, a male and a female. I think we're kind of in a mixed bag there. But when we get into the area, you know, instinctively, females are more passive because they take the energy in. They're the ones that take the baby in. They're the ones who have to sit. They're the ones who have to wait. They're the ones who have to nurse. And so they go into an internal world, which could equate to some sense of, well, not stagnation, but stillness. So you're trying to activate, Laurel, a sense of outwardness, a sense of aggression. And here in the opaque term of masculinity, not in terms of, you know, like your, Clint Eastwood masculinity, but just in terms of the concept of masculinity, then we have to get into your own facet of female masculinity, female assertion, female aggression, with all due boundary lines. So I think there you've got to breathe into that element. Let me ask you something, just a curious question. Was your mom a passive depressed person, more housebound or not?
You cut out. What did you say? Was there what in my home?
Was your mother, would you say your mother was more housebound and more passive, or was she an aggressive businesswoman?
She was a go-getter. I mean, she wasn't like she was very strong.
Yeah. And your father?
He was a strong man too, but he was more of a passive person.
Okay. So what you've got to do is, first of all, look at the components of male and female energy, starting with your immediate stance on the planets between mother and father. And you've got to go into that zone and build within yourself this sense of, and I see you have children because you've mentioned it, but build within yourself at the age of 52 now, which is still young, you're a young 52, because you're looking for assertiveness. So you're looking at something between the marriage of the third eye and the heart, the element of that combination, which is actually in your birthday, 6 and 4, and the distance between the two numbers is 2, which is a sort of sexual energy aggression. But when we talk about sexuality here, we're talking about the activation of your own self. So here you're not activating the self to have children. Here you're activating the self for rebirth, for the sense that you're promoting something within your body where some of the molecular structure is changing due to maybe premenopause or some such thing. And you're starting to have a conversation with your body in terms of how to enlighten the cellular structure of your being. So we're getting into very interesting concepts here about yourself as a woman, Laurel, that you have to talk to yourself and get up a new program of a new attitude, the new deal, the new premise of measurement in terms of who Laurel is going to be for the next 20, 25 years in terms of the activity of your energy, so that your old cells can leave and be replaced with new cells that are programmed with a new attitude about life, even as you are reaching 52 or, you know, about
well, it is today.
In the zone today. So does that make any sense? We're talking about you talking to your body. Your body isn't shutting down. It's just that some of your cells need to be replaced with a new cellular program. It's attitude.
Hmm. Yep.
How old are your kids, just out of curiosity, Laurel?
18 and 20.
So
Yeah, well, and actually they just...
What? I'm sorry, say that again, Laurel.
They actually both have just left the house too, so I am looking at, you know, kind of starting again.
That's what I was thinking. That's why
I hate this phrase.
We have another person we're dealing with this emptiness syndrome right now.
Emptiness. And the worst phrase of all, the emptiness.
You know, whatever, but
there's no empty nest. Because you're not a hen laying eggs and found
God
out
forbid.
That when you stood up there were no eggs under your bottom. There's no empty nest here. There is a regrouping of energy that now allows you to get beyond the childbearing responsibilities and all that and to reinvent yourself in such a way that you fly the coop. A lot of women just go in and they go through that syndrome. I'm not proposing that I'm not ignorant. I understand that I'm not a female and that there's real reality in that concept. But I'm not going to be led to the belief that we are prisoner to an empty nest conception or a woman is a prisoner to an empty nest state of mind. Reinvent yourself.
Yep.
Be excited. Look at the things that you can do now that you have sacrificed during the childbearing years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
so
I am excited.
To restructuring your thoughts in your brain. And hopefully this show inspired you a little bit today, Laurel.
It did. Yeah.
I'm glad.
I really appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a great birthday and keep in touch with us.
I will. Take
you can
care,
connect
guys.
With
have
us on Facebook
day.
And here on Blog Talk Radio. You have a great day too.
Happy
and
birthday.
Follow us here. Follow us here, follow us there. okay. I'm
the John Denver.
Follow me.
Follow
me where I go. Who I do, what I know.
I don't
want to
follow
blah.
Him and he's slanging in a plane.
Oh gosh, we've talked about him. Makes me so sad.
Can you imagine him singing that song in his last flight?
Well, I think there was something else going on with that crash, but that's a different topic too. Okay. 201. I'm bringing on because I don't know if they heard me. Did you want a reading 201 or are you just listening? They're silent. Okay, 201 is going off the air. 805. Hello.
Hi. Hi, good morning,
Hi.
Both of you. And happy
Hi.
Birthday to your last caller.
Oh,
anyways,
thanks so
much. This is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Anyways, everything is like, I think we talked about repairs and everything breaking and, you know, this high energy. Anyways, randomly about 2 months ago, I just decided to ask one of my tenants to move. I had the flu that day and something came over me. I'm like, I just need to give them notice. I don't know why, but I need to. So I did. They were living in the house for like over 6 years. Actually, the gal living there was a realtor, but she had a couple kids and I guess she divorced after many years too and was still living there. Anyway, so I get the house back, and absolutely everything in the plumbing in every room is like broken, from the toilets to leaks to everything. I mean, you know, the dishwasher, turn it on, it leaks all over the floor. So now I'm just wondering if I was kind of like guided to make her leave so I can get in there and take care of things that I was never told about. Because, you know, if somebody tells me something needs to be fixed, I have it done in 24 hours, 48 hours
right.
if it's something that's, you know, a dishwasher or something and it's minor. But I was just shocked. And so now I'm kind of at odds, like, was I supposed to just go in there and fix it and then re-rent it, or go in there and fix it and then sell the property? So I'm really kind of confused, but I know I was called to make her leave definitely for the repairs.
So
but is there more?
The repairs, Cheryl, I just want to clarify, is this something that was due to their misuse of the property, or is this something that just failed and they failed to report?
Well, you know what? It's probably a combination of both, but I know when I first went out there at one time after they moved in, you know, the boys were younger. I think they were like 10 and 12, and I think they were standing on like the sink. So the sink clips underneath. There's certain things that just don't break, you know, that just last. You'd have to like step into the sink. And, you know, like the toilet upstairs was new. I redid the floor, and it was like, if you stand on that, then you squish the seal underneath it, and then the toilet leaks onto the floor and rots it out, and that's what happened. So some of it is stuff that wouldn't happen unless you're horse playing. Other things, well, let me see. I gave him a new dishwasher a year ago, And so it's leaking onto the floor. But more important than that is like the front's dented. Those things don't happen. I've had my dishwasher 13 years. What, how do you dent a front, you know, kick the plate at the bottom and then have a dent in the middle? So I would say probably a majority, at least half of it was just pure neglect. And the other half, sure, it could be a ring or something that needs to be replaced, you know, some kind of toilet issue, and, you know.
Well, Cheryl, it sounds like there was abuse going on as well. So, you know, logically, you went in, something compelled you to go in there, whatever, you got them out. And I think it was a godsend because they were abusing the property. They weren't reporting it. Some things were wearing out, but then not reporting this neglect. And then it seems like there was some form of impact on the unit itself, where there was negligence or damage or physicality to the property that caused, and like I said, damage. So getting them out was essential. You don't need people ruining and being pigs and irresponsible and treating other people's property as though it were a wrestling match environment. So good, good riddance, get rid of them. That's part of being a landlord. You know, you did your duty. I don't think that it extends itself to a sign that you have to sell it. This is more of a practical premise of whether you want to keep it or sell it, what's going to be more profitable. So that's market value assessment and what you strategically you want to do. I think that, you know, when you have a property and that where there are X number of people that can be renting from you, according to how many units you have or rooms, whatever, you're dealing with also with a tribal situation. So you have a tribal consciousness in terms of your village, your tribe, what you bring in. And that factor is most important when it comes to the degree of how people are responsible or irresponsible. So it's your, you know, whatever you want to do. I don't know if it's a house, it's a unit within a complex.
Yeah, it's actually, you know what, it's actually a townhome, and I bought it 8 years ago. And I thought, you know what, because I have four kids, I thought it'd be kind of cool to have something. It's expensive to live in Ventura County. So when I got it, it was good. Now, we had, at the time, just regular property management. We had like 9,000 in reserve, and I totally turned that whole board around. I actually was on the board for a little bit, but since I don't live there, we have like $85,000 in reserve now. And I mean, so there was a good part of me coming into that to get rid of waste and all of that. However, the person who's basically in charge right now, you know, the front of the sign when you enter the complex, it's just 12 units. That's fallen over, yet we have 80,000 in reserve. So there's things that I don't like, you know, and I'm not going to say I'm a controlling person. I get stuff done, but I'm hard on me as well. It's not just I'm hard on other people. I want things right, and they don't have to be perfectly right. I mean, I'm human, but just the whole thing about this, the HOAs, you know, and the people that run them, and not having control over any of that has me a little upset. So I'm like, but still, do I sell or not sell? The energy of the place feels good.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, the homeowners association is one other topic. But what we're dealing with, I mean, and it has its own implications about karma and everything. But what we're dealing with is a deeper problem, Cheryl, about the connection you have with this property, the land connection, the karmic connection, the area as to the address, the location. All of this is very important. It has to go, would have to go into more and deeper analysis for me to actually respond further from this point, because it does require a little bit of conceptual thought,
especially
in terms of what you want to do with this property. That demands a deeper examination, because it is an investment.
Especially because Cheryl, how many properties do you own?
Well, I used to have like 14. Now I'm down to like, you know, five. This is my last mortgage property. So at this point I have six, but I'm just thinking about foreclosing on somebody that's 3 years back, you know, late in property tax as well. And I've given him 3 years. I could have foreclosed on him 2 years ago, and it's not his primary home, but it's like, so I'm dealing with a lot of property stuff, but I would say I've got, you know, it's all coming to the forefront right now. I mean, I found like mold in my son's, you know, closet the other day, and I've got like someone on the roof right now trying to fix the plumbing problem for the third time. I mean, it's fine. It goes with the territory, and it's, you know, all worth it in the end. But Yeah, there's a lot of just changing that needs to go on. And I've reduced the amount of properties that I own that I have to fix and deal with. But I think some properties are going to be coming back to me just due to the economy, you know, the economy
right,
the way it's
because,
going. So.
Because it's already, I mean, again, we're on the topic of the show today, complex nature of this issue. One, you're someone who's a property owner, 14 properties at one time, that's a lot of properties. So all those contingencies, tribal energies, what's going on the earth plane, all of those are factors, and it's so difficult. I mean, with so many different situations, what's going on in each situation, how it impacts the other, and in this particular, the question is whether you should sell or not. I mean, it really does require more depth.
Right.
Than,
yeah, it would. Normally I would know, like, right off the bat. Yeah. It would take more depth in that one. But normally, you know, things like that. And 14 is kind of crazy. I'm better off maybe finding a small apartment building. I really want to find like an old hotel and do some transitional housing for people that, you know, are going to be affected by the economy to come. So I have things and visions that I want to do. But, yeah, this one just caught me kind of off guard in a lot of
things.
I feel, you know, I'm being tested right now. I think we all are, what we can handle and getting used to handling a lot of things. We have to get
that's
used
true.
To that. So,
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Well,
okay.
Thank you for your call, Cheryl. And
thank
hopefully
you.
It'll
thank
be
you guys as always. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Neil, I think we're out of time and we are returning on Friday. We're going to continue that discussion. Anything you wanted to say before we close the
no,
show?
No, I think that's about wraps it up.
That wraps it up. We'll speak to you and hear from you on Friday, everybody. Thanks.